This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Girls in Pants, The Third Summer of the Sisterhood by Anne Brashares. Read for you by Angela Gothels. Girls in Pants. We, the Sisterhood, hereby instate the following rules to govern the use of the traveling pants. Number one, you must never wash the pants. Number two, you must never double cuff the pants. It's tacky. There will never be a time when this will not be tacky. Number three, you must never say the word fat, P-H-A-T, while wearing the pants. You must also never think, I am fat, F-A-T, while wearing the pants. Number four, you must never let a boy take off the pants, although you may take them off yourself in his presence. Number five, you must not pick your nose while wearing the pants. You may, however, scratch casually at your nostril while really kind of picking. Number six, upon our reunion, you must follow the proper procedures for documenting your time in the pants. Number seven, you must write to your sisters throughout the summer, no matter how much fun you are having without them. Number eight, you must pass the pants along to your sisters according to the specifications set down by the sisterhood. Failure to comply will result in a severe spanking upon our reunion. Number nine, you must not wear the pants with a tucked-in shirt and belt. See rule number two. Number 10, remember, pants equals love. Love your pals. Love yourself. In summer, the song sings itself. William Carlos Williams. Prologue. If you are listening to this, you may know about us. Or about our pants, anyway. If you do, you can skip ahead. If you don't, hang here with me for a minute. I'll try to make it painless. You may say, I don't want to listen to a book about pants, and I can understand how you feel. In England, when they say pants, they mean underwear. Did you know that? But trust me, these are epic pants. These pants have the stunning power to transform four ordinary teenage girls into raving beauties living lives of astonishing adventure, not to mention causing delicious young men to fall constantly at their feet. Okay, I exaggerate. They don't actually do that. But they do hold us together when we're apart. They make us feel secure and loved. They walk us to places we wouldn't otherwise dare to go. They help us know which boys are worthy and which ones are not. They make us better people and better friends. All this, I swear, is true. And they look good along the way. Who are we? We are we. We have always been we. Sometimes we are us. Grammatically, it's just a fact. It's all thanks to Gilda's Gym in Bethesda, Maryland, for offering a prenatal aerobics class roughly 18 years ago. My mom, Carmen's mom, Lena's mom, and Bee's mom bounded and sweated through a long pregnant summer, and then they each gave birth to a baby girl, plus a baby boy in Bee's mom's case, in September. As far as I can tell, in those first few years, our mothers raised us more like a litter of puppies than as actual individual children. It was later that our mothers started to grow apart. How can I describe the four of us? Let's use the metaphor of cars. Carmen would be a torqued-up cherry-red gas guzzler with a V8 engine and four-wheel drive. She can make a mess of things, but she's a lot of fun. She sticks to the road, and she's got mad acceleration. Lena would get good gas mileage, like one of those hybrid cars. She would be easy on the environment and, of course, easy on the eyes. She would have state-of-the-art GPS, but it would be wrong sometimes. She would have airbags. Bee would have no airbags. She might not have bumpers. She might not even have brakes. She would go a million miles an hour. She would be an ocean blue Ferrari minus the brakes. And I, Tibby, would be a bike. No, just kidding. I am old enough to drive, damn it. What would I be? I would be a muscular Plymouth Duster, dark green, with a picky transmission. Okay, maybe that's just what I'd want to be, but I'm the one writing this, so I get to decide. The pants first came to us at the perfect moment. That is, when we were splitting up for the first time. It was 2 summers ago when they first worked their magic, and last summer when they shook up our lives once again. You see, we don't wear the pants year-round. We let them rest during the year, so they are extra powerful when summer comes. There was the time this winter when Carmen wore them to her mom's wedding, but that was a special case. We thought it was a big deal 2 years ago, our first summer apart. Now, we're facing our last summer together. Tomorrow, we graduate from high school. In September, we go to college. And it's not like one of those TV shows where all of us magically turn up at the same college. We are going to 4 different schools in 3 different cities, but all within 4 hours of one another. That was our one rule. B is the sloppiest student of us four, and she got into every school she applied to. Can you say all-American? She chose Brown. Lena decided, against her parents' advice, to go to art school at the Rhode Island School of Design. Carmen is going to Williams, just as she always dreamed, and I am starting film school at NYU. As life changes go, it's really, really big. If you're my dad, you say, hey, you'll see each other at Thanksgiving. But if you're me, you realize that life as we've known it is over. Our shared childhood is ending. Maybe we'll never live at home again. Maybe we'll never all live in the same place again. We're headed off to start our real lives. To me, that is awe-inspiring, but it is also the single scariest thought in the world. Tomorrow night, at Gilda's, we'll launch the pants on their 3rd summer voyage. Tomorrow begins the time of our lives. It's when we'll need our pants the most.
Afterwards, the universe will explode for your pleasure. Douglas Adams.
Okay, be with Greta and Valia and Lena, Carmen ordered, shepherding a wandering grandmother with her hand. B and Lena intertwined their legs, trying to tip each other over, as Carmen clicked her digital camera. Okay, Effie and, Perry, and Catherine and Nikki, with Tibby and Lena and B.
Lena cast her a look. Lena hated pictures. Are you getting paid or something? She asked grumpily. Carmen pushed her hair off her sweaty neck. The shiny black gown permitted no flow of air. She shook off the mortarboard, whoever thought of that name, and pressed it under her arm.
Squeeze together, would you? I'm losing Perry.
Tibby's 3-year-old sister Catherine bleated angrily as her older brother Nikki stomped on her foot. It wasn't Carmen's fault her friends had large families, but it was graduation, for God's sake. This was a big day. She wasn't going to miss anybody. She didn't have any official brothers or sisters. She had to make the most of her unofficial ones.
There is no shade,
Valia, Lena's grandmother, noted bitterly. It was a football field. Carmen briefly imagined the trouble with an elm or oak planted at the 50-yard line. The thought of this made her turn toward the raucous bunch of graduating football players, their families and admirers. It was one of the many clumps and cliques spread out over the hot field, a last stand for social order. Carmen's grandma, Carmen Sr., Signora, as Tibby called her, cast searing looks at Albert, Carmen's father, as though blaming him for the merciless heat. Carmen could practically read her grandmother's mind. If Albert could leave Christina, Carmen's mother, what couldn't that man be capable of?
Now's the big one, okay, everybody?
It had been a long morning. Carmen knew she was wearing everyone thin. She was irritating herself at this point. But who else looked out for posterity, huh?
Last one, I swear.
She arranged the dads and full-grown boys in the back. Even Lena's dad, not because he was tall, B had a good 3 inches on him, but because Carmen was a generally thoughtful person, if she did think so herself. Grandmothers and mothers took the next row. Valia, Carmen Sr., Tibby's ancient great-grandma Felicia, who didn't know where she was, Greta nervously patting her perm. Then there was Ari in her handsome beige suit, Christina, constantly looking over her shoulder at her new husband, David, Tibby's mom with the lipstick on her teeth, and there was Albert's wife, Lydia, looking eager but also anxious that she might be taking up an extra square inch of space. Lastly, Carmen ordered the remaining siblings into place. Effie pulled a dire face about having to kneel on a level with Nikki and Catherine. Tibby coaxed Brian from his spot on the sidelines and arranged him in the back row. And now it was the September's turn. Sitting in the front, they clutched each other in a mass of hot black polyester, leaving a space in the middle for Carmen. "Okay, great," Carmen shouted at them all in encouragement. "Just hold on one second." Carmen nearly wrestled Ms. Collings from the dais. Ms. Collings was the teacher who'd sent Carmen out to the hallway the greatest number of times, but she was also the teacher who loved her best. "We're all set," Carmen said. "Here." She demonstrated to Ms. Collings the camera placement she wanted. For a moment, Carmen studied the viewfinder. She saw them all, encompassed in the little frame, her beloved friends, her mom, stepmom, stepdad, actual dad, grandma, her friends' moms, dads, families, who felt as close as if they were her own. This was her whole life, right here, her tribe, everything that mattered. And this moment. This was it, somehow. All of them celebrating a day and an accomplishment that belonged to the four of them equally. This was the culmination of a shared life. Carmen threw herself into her pile of friends. She screamed out of pure emotion, which got them all screaming. She felt the heave of flesh as every layer of their group seemed to sink into the hole more fully. Arms wrapped around shoulders and waists, cheeks pressed together, wrinkly and smooth. Then, Carmen burst into tears, knowing that in the picture, her eyes would look very puffy indeed. Granted, Tibby was in a mood. All she could see was change. All anybody talked about was change. She didn't like Bees wearing heels for the second day in a row. She felt peevish about Lena's getting 3 inches trimmed off her hair. Couldn't everybody just leave everything alone for a few minutes? Tibby was a slow adjuster. In preschool, her teachers had said she had trouble with transitions. Tibby preferred looking backward for information rather than forward. As far as she was concerned, she'd take a nursery school report card over a fortune teller any day of the week. It was the cheapest and best self-analysis around. Tibby saw Gilda's through these same eyes. It was changing. Its glory days of the late 1980s were far behind it. It was showing its age. The once shiny wood floor was scratched and dull. One of the mirror panels was cracked. The mats looked as old as Tibby, and they'd been cleaned much less. Gilda's was trying to get with the times, offering kickboxing and yoga, according to the big chalkboard, but it didn't look to Tibby like that was helping much. What if it went out of business? What a horrible thought. Maybe Tibby should buy a subscription of classes here. No, that would be weird, wouldn't it? "Tibby, you ready?" Lena was looking at her with concerned eyebrows. "What if Gilda's closes?" Tibby opened her mouth, and that was what came out. Carmen, holding the traveling pants, Lena, lighting the candles, Bee, fussing with the dimmer switches near the door, all turned to her. "Look at this place," Tibby gestured around. "I mean, who comes here?" Lena was puzzled. "I don't know, somebody? Women? Yoga people?" "Yoga people?" Carmen asked. "I don't know," Lena said again, laughing. Tibby was the one most capable of emotional detachment, but tonight it all lay right on the surface. Her irrational thoughts about Gilda's made her feel desperate, like its demise could swallow up their whole existence, like a change in the present could wipe out the past. The past felt fragile to her, but the past was set, right? It couldn't be changed. Why did she feel such a need to protect it? "I think it's pants time," Carmen said. The snacks were out. The candles were lit. The egregiously bad dance music played. Tibby wasn't sure she wanted it to be pants time yet. She was having enough trouble maintaining control. She was scared of them noticing what all this meant. Too late. Out of Carmen's arms came the artifacts of their ritual. The pants, slowly unfolding from their winter compression, seeming to gain strength as they mixed with the special air of Gilda's. Carmen laid them on the ground, and on top of them, the manifesto, written on that first night 2 years before, describing the rules of wearing them. Silently, they formed their circle, studying the inscriptions and embroidery that chronicled their summer lives. "Tonight, we say goodbye to high school, and bye to B for a while," Carmen said in her ceremonial voice. "We say hello to summer, and hello to the traveling pants." Her voice grew less ceremonial. "Tonight, we are not worrying about goodbye to each other. We're saving that for the beach at the end of the summer, that's the deal, right?" Tibby felt like kissing Carmen. Brave as she was, even Carmen was daunted by the implications of looking ahead. "That's the deal," Tibby agreed heartily. The last weekend of the summer had already become sacred in their minds. Sacred and feared. The Morgans owned a house right on the beach in Rehoboth. They had offered it to Carmen for that final weekend, in part, Carmen suspected, because they had gotten an au pair from Denmark and felt guilty about not hiring Carmen to babysit this summer as she had done the summer before. The four of them had promised each other in the spring that it would be their weekend. The four of them and nobody else. They all depended upon it. The future was unfurling fast, but whatever happened this summer, that weekend stood between them and the great unknown. They all looked ahead to college in different ways, Tibby knew. They all had different amounts to lose. B, in her lonely house, had nothing. Carmen did. She dreaded saying goodbye to her mother. Tibby feared leaving the familiarity of her chaos. Lena flipped and flopped. One day she was afraid to cut ties, and the next she was dying to get away. The thing they feared equally and powerfully was saying goodbye to one another. After drawing for the pants, Tibby won, reviewing the rules, unnecessary but still part of tradition, and taking a brief hiatus to chew down some gummy worms, it was at last time for the vow. Like they had the summer before, they said it together. "To honor the pants and the sisterhood, and this moment and this summer and the rest of our lives, together and apart." Only this time, Tibby felt the tears fall when they said, "the rest of our lives," because in the past, that had always seemed like a distant road, and tonight, she knew in her heart, they were already on it. "Somebody already broke my heart," Sade. That night, Tibby had a dream about taxidermy. In it, her crazy great-grandma Felicia had had the traveling pants stuffed as her graduation gift.
"It's just what you wanted," Felicia shouted at her.
The stuffing job looked totally professional. The pants were mounted on a polished marble pedestal and inhabited by fake legs to look as if they were jauntily mid-step. As animated as they looked, you had to notice that there was no body or head or even any feet. They were connected to the marble base by a brass pipe sticking out of one pant leg.
"But they can't go anywhere," Tibby pointed out timidly.
"That's the point," Felicia thundered. "It's just what you wanted."
"I did?" Tibby asked, confused and guilty for having maybe wanted it. She found herself wondering if they were too heavy to be circulated among their various dorm rooms.
"Now we really won't have to worry about washing them," she consoled herself in her dream reality.
When Tibby awoke, Catherine was at her side. Catherine's head, as she stood there, loomed 1 inch from Tibby's as she lay down.
"Brian's visiting."
Catherine loved trying out words. She was happy with herself that she'd said visiting as opposed to just here. Tibby groggily sat up.
"What time is it?" Catherine moved herself in front of Tibby's clock radio and studied it hopefully.
God, it's almost 11, Tibby answered herself.
She was about to head directly down the stairs, but then she decided to brush her teeth first. When she arrived in the kitchen, Brian was at the table setting up dominoes with Nikki.
Let's try to set up a few at once,
Brian counseled patiently, arranging them in a snaking row. Nikki only wanted to knock them over.
Hey, Tibby said.
Hey.
Did you eat breakfast? She asked.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He seemed a bit nervous for some reason, the way his shoulders were rising toward his ears.
What's up? She asked him.
She went to the refrigerator to inspect.
Just, can I talk to you for a second?
She closed the refrigerator and stood up straighter. She looked at him.
Sure.
In there?
He gestured toward the living room. Tibby's eyebrows nearly joined over her nose.
In there?
Nobody ever did anything in the living room in her house. Loretta ventured in once a week to clear out the cobwebs, and every few months, her parents had a party and acted like they relaxed on those perfect sofas all the time. Mystified, she followed him. They posed on the sofa like cocktail party guests.
So, what?
She asked him, a sprout of worry in her chest. It was slightly funny how they were sitting next to each other and both facing forward. He rubbed both palms against the denim covering his thighs. Tibby pulled her legs up onto the sofa so she could turn to him.
Everything okay?
I wanted to ask you something.
Okay, ask.
You know the thing tonight?
You mean the senior party?
Will you go with me?
Her eyebrows compressed even further.
We're all going, right? Lena, B.
He waved a hand to acknowledge all that.
But will you go with me?
She was utterly perplexed.
You mean like a date?
She blurted it out because it sounded so ridiculous.
Kind of, yeah.
Suddenly, it seemed mean to snort or laugh at the preposterousness of this concept. She tilted her head. He was very brave to keep looking at her eyes the way he did. She clasped her hands. It dawned on her that she was wearing a tank top and her pajama bottoms. Tibby spent an unusual amount of time in her pajamas, so it wasn't like Brian hadn't seen her in them hundreds of times. But here, in this stage-set living room, under the glare of this weird question, it only accentuated the weirdness.
A kind of date?
She asked slowly.
Kind of.
She wouldn't hurt his feelings. She just wouldn't. It didn't matter where this would lead them. She nodded.
Okay.
She felt raw sitting with him on the sofa. When he leaned toward her, she had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. His body moved in slow motion, and she seemed to see herself and Brian from some distant spot in the room. He possessed a new kind of confidence, a deliberateness. She was both terrified and eerily calm. So she sat still, looking into his eyes as he reached toward her face. He didn't kiss her or anything like that, but what he did felt just as shockingly intimate. The first three fingers of his right hand landed lightly on her warm face and smoothed out the rumple of consternation in the center of her forehead.
Okay,
he said. One day in the early spring, when Lena stayed home sick from school, she watched a young woman on a daytime talk show who'd written a book about being adopted. This woman had never met or been contacted by her birth mother, and yet she spent her whole life wishing and hoping her birth mother would find her. She talked about how she didn't want to move from the home where her parents had first adopted her. She didn't like to take long trips. She always left explicit forwarding instructions when she moved. She made sure her phone was listed under her own name. She left her little trail of breadcrumbs. She wanted to make sure she could be found. Since then, Lena had thought about this woman many times, and she wasn't sure why. She didn't dwell on it. Minds worked in weird ways, like how Lena always thought of Ritz crackers when she shaved her legs. Who knew why, and did it even matter? But now, as she lay on her bed, filling out forms for school in September, Lena thought about the woman on the talk show again. She filled out a roommate questionnaire, and she kept flashing on the woman's sad, gray eyes. She filled out the dorm preference sheet, and she saw the woman's twitching lower lip. And as Lena lay back on her bed and put her hands over her face, it finally dawned on her. This woman reminded Lena of herself. Without even realizing it, Lena had subtly resisted the idea of going away this summer. Even a week away from home made her feel slightly unglued. The thought of moving to another city in September, thrilling as it was also a source of agony. Lena wanted to leave home. For one thing, she was ready. For another thing, since her dad had forced Valia, his widowed mother, to leave her beautiful Greek island and relocate to suburban Maryland, the Caligaris house had been full of tension. Lena looked forward to RISD. She wanted to be an artist, she was almost sure of it. Her art class this summer was the single joy in her life, apart from her friends. And yet, Lena didn't want to go. And the reason was that she didn't want to leave the place where Kostas could find her. And on a deeper level, she didn't want to put more distance, in time or in space, between now and the time when he'd loved her. She didn't want to become a different girl from the one whom he had loved. The phone rang, and Lena snatched it up before Valia could get it and yell at the innocent caller.
Hello?
Hi, it's me.
Karma, hi. What are you doing?
Getting dressed. I had another waxing fiasco. What are you wearing? Lena cast her eye at the clock. She was supposed to meet everybody at the senior party in half an hour. She was bringing Effie as her date, because she had no other date, and because Effie was spocking on some senior guy or other. Lena then cast her glance on her open closet. She had no excitement in getting dressed. Her wardrobe had two categories, the clothing she had worn with Kostas, filled with memories, and the clothing she hadn't, empty. She didn't want either.
I don't know, I didn't pick yet.
Lenny, it's a big night, Carmen cajoled. Get dressed, wear something great, put on makeup. Do you need me to come over?
No, I'm all right.
She didn't feel like setting Carmen loose in her closet. Don't wear that khaki skirt, Carmen warned.
I'm not,
Lena said defensively, even though it was exactly what she had planned to wear. Unfortunately, Lena's wardrobe represented her life. It was binary, like a computer with its universe of zeros and ones. Lena had two settings. One, thinking about Kostas. Two, avoiding thinking about Kostas. Lena deeply empathized with the adopted woman on the talk show. Lena, too, had been abandoned by the person she thought loved her best of all. And without meaning to or wanting to, she harbored a passive, unquenchable hope that someday he would come for her. Where there is great love, there are always wishes. Willa Cather.
Brian! Brian's here!
Catherine threw open the front door and shouted the news to the top of the house. Brian clearly longed for a real live date. He presented flowers to Tibby and a box of chocolates to Alice for the family. It was as though he'd read about dating in a manual somewhere. Nonetheless, he didn't seem to mind that his real live date was wearing jeans while he was wearing a suit jacket and tie.
You look beautiful,
he said, taking in the look of her. From the traveling pants to the filmy iris blouse that showed what cleavage she had to its best possible effect, to the antique rhinestone clip in her hair, to the coal shading along her upper eyelids. She really had tried to look pretty. One thing about Brian was he understood the pants. Just like Bailey, two summers before, had understood them implicitly. The pants, in a way, were like the ultimate litmus test, separating the worthy from the unworthy. And no matter how he looked, Brian was the most worthy guy she'd ever known. Few people in the course of history had ever transformed, even just physically, as much as Brian had since the afternoon 2 years before, when Tibby and Bailey first filmed him at the 7-Eleven. It was great and all, a supreme dork with a golden heart whom you befriend because you love him, grows to 6'2", gets his dental hygiene together, accidentally breaks his hideous glasses, and morphs into a virtual heartthrob before your eyes. It was like dumbly buying a share of stock at $1 and watching it soar to $100. Tibby still observed in stupefaction how girls whispered and flirted around Brian these days. But on the other hand, it seemed to Tibby like another example of Destiny's strange sense of humor. The single safest guy in Tibby's life had turned imposing. He didn't impose on purpose, she knew. He didn't desire her to be mean to her. He didn't plant these feelings in her heart to make her sad. But desire was there, his and hers, and as a consequence, it wasn't a safe relationship anymore.
Brian! Brian! Brian!
Catherine and Nikki were literally dancing around him. Brian had earned their love the hard way, not by being their peevish older sister, but by playing every endless, tedious game they could devise and listening carefully to every harebrained thing they could think of to say. They were a lot more demonstrative than his real live date, come to think of it. Brian's innocence gave him a funny kind of confidence. It was hard to explain. He didn't care that he had walked all the way to her house because he had no car. He wasn't self-conscious that their date car was her car. Once outside, he gallantly opened the door for her, on the driver's side. He didn't care, so it didn't matter. Inside the car, it was private. So dark and private. He touched his hand to the inside of her elbow. She got scared and fumbled the key into the ignition. They were growing up. That was a fact she had to face. He had grown from a kid to nearly a man. He was 18 years old. He wanted Tibby in a different way than he used to. He looked at her differently. He wasn't pushy or gross, but his eyes did linger on her breasts. When he put his hand on her, she could tell he was feeling the curve of her waist. And when he looked at her like that, she felt different too. It was natural, right? In the school parking lot, he reached for her hand. Hers was clammy. What about friendship, though? What about the ease between them? Where was that going to go? And if they let it go, could they ever get it back? That was the thing about this summer. With everything that was happening, she wondered, was there any going back? The auditorium was dark, and the DJ was loud and grating, like at every school social function. But this was their last one, and for that reason, Tibby couldn't bring herself to hate it quite as much. Brian held her hand fast. He was declaring their couplehood. Ironically, he did her more credit than himself. This spring, his social star had certainly risen past hers. Not that he noticed or cared. In spite of her beautiful friends, Tibby was identified more with the disaffected artist types. B was a glamour jock. Carmen had turned into quite the babe, the target of a lot of underclassmen fantasies, though she'd never curried favor with the ruling set. Lena flew under the social radar, and Brian, oddly, had become a darling of the social world. Even they needed new blood occasionally, getting invitations none of the rest of them got. Tibby was one of those who sat on the sidelines in dark clothes, making cynical observations with other self-designated misfits who were too cautious to jump into the fray. Of all the boys in school, only Brian seemed to notice how Tibby's hair had grown out, how her delicate shoulders looked in a tube top, how the pants made her small behind look especially nice. She loved being noticed like this, and also she didn't. B and Carmen found them right away. Lena and Effie hadn't arrived yet. Effie was an infamously slow and primping date. B was wearing a white halter dress and her hair was brighter than the tea lights. She looked like an extremely fit Marilyn Monroe. Carmen wore a siren red slip dress to which the boys were already flocking. As stunning as they looked in their finery, Tibby was still grateful it was she who had drawn for the pants. Bridget and Carmen hustled Tibby off to the bathroom in their time-honored way. The cavernous girls' bathroom was always the most happening spot at a school party.
"You both look unbelievable," Tibby said along the way.
"You, Tibby, are luscious," Carmen responded. "Brian looked like his heart was going to break when we took you away."
An army of gussied girls were perfecting makeup, smoking, and gossiping in front of the mirrors. Bee took out her lip gloss. She put some on and shared it around.
"Hey, Bee," Carmen said.
"Yeah?"
"If you ever meet a guy, and you fall in love with him, but because of some weird genetic mutation, he doesn't seem to return the feeling?"
Bee always went patiently along with Carmen's counterfactuals.
"Yeah."
"Wear that dress."
Bee laughed.
"Okay."
Lena arrived a few minutes later, dressed down, as usual, in an olive-green cargo skirt and a black shirt.
"Lenny, did you have to wear the ponytail?" Carmen asked fake irritably.
"What do you mean?" she asked.
"Come on, it's our last high school party," Bee said.
Together, they put some mascara and lip gloss on her and coaxed the elastic out of her hair. Looking at their faces in the mirror, Tibby felt as though she might cry. This was the place where they'd spent the majority of school events these last 4 years. They had had more fun here, together, than any place else. This, on some level, was their real high school experience. Carmen caught her look.
"It's sad, I know."
"Let's get back out there," Tibby said.
She didn't want to feel these things right now. Back in the auditorium, they dispersed. Brian was waiting eagerly.
"Do you want to dance?" he asked Tibby.
Was she allowed to say no? Was a real live date allowed to say no? As he took her hand and led her to the floor, the fast song changed into a slow one. Was that better or worse? She couldn't decide. It would have taken her an hour to figure out how to get her arms around Brian, but he went right for it. He closed in and held her tight. So here it was. This was a first. She had, admittedly, thought a lot about Brian's body and how it would feel. Friendship seemed to fuzz at the edges as this new thing happened. He was so much taller than her now. Her head barely reached his chest. His hands were on her waist, her hips, her back, slowly touching the places he'd looked at for so long. She felt a lightness in her lower abdomen, a wobbliness in her legs. This was going too fast. It was getting away from her. She couldn't do it. Her cheeks were deeply flushed as she pulled away.
"Can we go?"
she asked.
"Where?"
he asked.
"I'm not sure."
She took his hand and led him out of the auditorium and toward the parking lot. She suddenly had her idea. She'd get them back to basics. He followed her into the car without complaint. In silence, she drove to the seminal 7-Eleven on River Road. He realized what she was up to. He smiled and shrugged at her under the pulsing lights of the store. He went obligingly toward Dragon Master and fished around in his pockets for change. Even as she watched him, she knew he would play their old game to please her, but his life was outside of the screen now.
"Never mind," she said.
She was skittish. Her legs were jumpy. A drop of sweat rolled down her spine. She couldn't figure out where to be. She was on the run. They got back into the car. She drove to a small neighborhood park equidistant from their houses. It was another of their places. They got out of the car and sat on a picnic table. It was quiet and dark. She was just going to have to stay still and let it catch her. She knew it. She hopped off the table. She stood in front of him. With her standing and him sitting, their faces were at the same level. She put her clammy hands on his knees. He scooted toward her, to the very edge of the table, and pulled her into his arms. He held her like that for a long time while her heart slammed out a beat. When she looked up, he kissed her first on the forehead and then on the lips. It was such a kiss. Full of pent-up desire and no uncertainties at all,
He put his hands under her hair, supporting the back of her head. He paused the kiss for only a moment to say something in her ear.
"I love you,"
was what he said. It was beautiful to her, unlike anything she had ever felt before. It brought tears to her eyes and still more warm blood to her face. Tibby felt the odd sensation of a wind blowing through her mind, alternately hot and sultry, then cold and bracing. And when the wind subsided, she realized that the friendship, as it had been, was gone. Someday, somebody's going to ask you a question that you should say yes to. Old 97s. Carmen was on a supremely important mission. She needed to steal her mother's fake eyelashes, and she needed to do it now. She'd gotten up early to say goodbye to Bea one last time before Bea left for camp in Pennsylvania. She'd eaten breakfast with her mom and spent a few minutes feeling guilty about not having a job as she watched Christina trundle off to work. She'd written a long email to her friend and stepbrother, Paul. Then she'd started to feel sad about saying goodbye to Bea, and it reminded her of goodbyes generally. So Carmen turned to the most recent issue of Cosmo Girl for solace, as she often did in moments like these. And voila, she was swept away by the imperative need to copy the innovative use of fake eyelashes on page 23. Sometimes it paid to be shallow. It was so different for Carmen these days walking into her mother's room. The reason was obvious. It wasn't her mother's room anymore. It was her mom and David's room. A woman's room was so different than a woman's room together with a man. It was utterly different when the woman was your mother and the man was her spanking new husband, whom you'd met less than a year before. Carmen wasn't grateful for her parents' divorce. There were so many things she'd lost, but it took David's presence now to show her what remarkable access and role-defying closeness she'd shared with her mother for all those years when it had been just the two of them. When her father had first left, a lot of the usual boundaries had come down. She'd slept in her mother's bed almost every night for a year. Was it for Carmen's sake or for Christina's? Once there was no dad coming home after a hard day of work, we girls, as her mother called them, had eaten Eggo waffles or scrambled eggs for dinner many nights. Carmen had considered it a treat, not having to saw through some hunk of flank steak and stomach the obligatory vegetables. Carmen used to feel an easy ownership of this room. Now she treaded uncertainly. She used to flop at will on her mother's bed. It was a different bed now. Not literally a different bed, but in every other way different. She steered wide around it now. It wasn't just that the room contained a lot of male stuff. David wasn't a slob or anything. He was always conscious that this apartment had been Christina and Carmen's long before he joined up. He commanded one closet, three bookshelves, and a new bureau from Pottery Barn. He didn't even have pictures yet. The room now testified not so much to him, but to them, their intimacy, the things they whispered to each other when they were falling asleep. Even when they weren't present, Carmen felt like she was invading it. The bathroom used to bloom with female stuff, creams, lotions, makeup, tampons, and perfume. Now, in deference to them, Christina kept it all mostly stowed in the cabinet. Even seeing David's shaving cream can lined up next to Christina's nail polish remover made Carmen feel like she'd just crawled between them in bed. The false eyelashes weren't in the medicine cabinet, Carmen quickly discovered. When you lived with your daughter, you left things like that in easy view. When you lived with your brand new husband, you hid the evidence. Carmen already knew that most of the stuff Christina didn't want David to see, she stored in the cabinet above the toilet. Yes, this was the right department, Carmen realized, as soon as she jiggled open the sticky door. There was wart remover,
There was mustache bleach, there was bikini wax and hair straightening balm, and a box of Nice and Easy in deep mahogany. Carmen snaked her hand toward the back, knocking over appetite suppressants and a pack of laxatives. A plastic bottle was set rolling by the falling laxatives. Carmen watched in displeasure as it fell off the shelf and splash into the toilet. Damn. She watched it bobbing in the toilet water. She could see it contained some kind of vitamins. She really hoped the cap was watertight. While she delayed reaching her hand into the toilet, who hurried to do a thing like that, she absently wondered why her mother kept vitamins in the cabinet of shame. David was all about vitamins. He ate them for breakfast. He talked about various herbal supplements like they were his best friends. What kind of vitamins would Christina keep from her dashing nutrition man? Carmen's curiosity was always her best motivator. She stuck her hand in the toilet and plucked out the bottle, tossing it directly into the sink and running hot water over it. She added some liquid soap. Once the bottle and her hand were sufficiently clean, she turned it over to satisfy her questioning mind. Her head grew chill and fuzzy. The fuzz invaded her chest and expanded in her lower abdomen. The front of the label communicated precisely why this bottle lived between the laxatives and the preparation H. But it wasn't David her mom was trying to hide them from. At least, that was what Carmen powerfully suspected. They were prenatal vitamins, the kind you took when you were having a baby. And Christina was almost certainly hiding them from Carmen. Tibby squinted in the morning sunlight. She was groggy and disoriented. Her lips were swollen, and her eyes felt puffy. She felt like she had a hangover, but not because she'd had any alcohol. It was one of those mornings when you come to terms with a strange new reality. You ask yourself, did I dream that? Did I actually do that? Did he really say that? Reality comes back in bits and pieces, and you experience the novelty of it all over again. You wonder, will this day and this night and tomorrow and all the rest of the days be different because of what happened last night? And in Tibby's case, she knew the answer. She put her fingers on her lips. Could you get a hangover from kissing? Was Brian awake yet? She pictured him in his bed. She pictured him in her bed. She got the shivery feeling in the bottom of her stomach, so she stopped picturing him in her bed. Was he regretting anything? Was she regretting anything? What would they say when they saw each other again? Would he just drop by during pancakes the way he often did? Would he plant a wet one on her lips and wait to see if anyone noticed? She stood up and looked at herself in the mirror. Did she look as different as she felt? Same black watch plaid pajama bottoms hanging down around her hips. Same undersized white tank top bearing several inches of belly. Maybe not. Her room was a big, cluttered mess. There was nothing new about that, but she did notice it in a new way as she looked around. Had she ever thrown out anything in her life? There were layers and layers of Tibby detritus both on the walls and on the floor. You could do an archaeological dig in this room and probably unearth her Fisher-Price farm if you tried hard enough. What was the matter with her? It was dusty and stuffy, and it bothered her. It was always dusty and stuffy. It didn't always bother her. In an uncharacteristic move, she walked over to the window and forced it open. It was hard going because she had not opened this room to actual air in as long as she could remember. The paint stuck a bit as she wrenched up the sash. Oh. The air came in and it did feel good. It was nice, open like this. The breeze blew around some of the papers on her desk, but she didn't mind. She heard her mother downstairs in the kitchen. She thought of telling her about Brian. A part of her really wanted her mom to know. Alice would be excited. She would make a big deal about it. She loved Brian. She would love the idea of her daughter telling her about a juicy milestone like this one. It was her mother-daughter fantasy, the very thing Tibby so often denied her.
As Tibby left her room, she registered the sound of the rustling leaves of the apple tree, so little heard here, and she liked it. Tibby watched her mother in her usual morning flurry. Would she be able to slow down for Tibby's news? Tibby tried to formulate the opening sentence.
Me and Brian.
Tibby opened her mouth, but Alice got there first.
Tibby, I need you to stay with Catherine this morning.
Alice already sounded mad, and Tibby hadn't even refused yet. Tibby's words dried up. Alice wouldn't look in Tibby's eyes, indicating that she felt guilty somewhere down deep, but the guilt only made her less patient.
Loretta has to take her sister to the doctor, and she can't be back till after lunch.
Alice snatched the juice boxes from the shelf and shoved one at Nikki.
Or that's what she says, anyway, she added ungenerously.
Why does her sister have to go to the doctor? Nikki asked.
Sweetie, she has some kind of infection, I don't know.
Alice gestured the whole issue away with a sweep of her arm, as if it might or might not be true, but she couldn't spend any more time thinking about it. Alice was flinging things into and out of her purse.
I have to take Nikki to camp and then go to the office.
I'm not doing it, Tibby said. Not only had she lost all desire to tell her mother about Brian, she never wanted to tell her mother about anything she cared about ever.
Alice gave her a look. Excuse me?
I'm not the babysitter. I'm sick of you dumping the job on me every time it's convenient.
You're living in this house, and that means you have to help out just like everybody else.
Tibby rolled her eyes. This fight was nasty, but it had taken place so many times they might as well have been following lines of a script. Catherine stirred her Cheerios around in her bowl. She slopped some of the milk onto the kitchen table. Tibby always felt distantly guilty for refusing to babysit Catherine in Catherine's presence, but she managed to get over it.
I can't wait to go to college, Tibby muttered, as though to herself, but not really.
The statement was untrue, and she said it only to make her mother unhappy. Half an hour later, Tibby sat on the back deck with a pile of papers and brochures from NYU, while Catherine careened around the backyard. The fight with her mom had shaken all the magic right out of her. She was back on the ground, looking down at the bugs rather than up at the sky. Eventually, Catherine's appetite for independent play ran out. She appeared in Tibby's face.
You want to climb the tree and pick apples?
This currently represented Catherine's greatest fantasy.
Catherine, no. Anyway, why do you want those apples so bad? They're not good. They're not ripe yet. And even if they were ripe, they'd be hard and sour.
Tibby had fallen into that shameful parent ennui where you said no before you even listened to what the kid wanted.
Did you ever eat one?
Catherine asked. Tibby hadn't ever eaten one, but she didn't feel like getting argued to the ropes by a 3-year-old.
I'm telling you, they're gross. If they were good, wouldn't we all be eating them instead of buying apples from the bin at the A&P?
Catherine seemed to find this kind of logic depressing.
I still want to try one.
Tibby sat there, watching Catherine sizing up the apple tree. She was too small to reach even the lowest branch, but she was undeterred. She backed up 10 or so yards from the trunk of the tree, ran as fast as she could, and jumped. Her attempt was so meager and ineffective it was almost heartbreaking. Catherine backed up for another go. She backed up farther this time for optimum speed. She ran with her arms bent tight at her elbows in a caricature of sprinting. It was so cute, objectively speaking, that one part of Tibby longed to get it on camera. But at the same time, Tibby was annoyed. She indulged herself in pettiness. She did not want to babysit. She was annoyed with her mother. If she were to let herself be absorbed into Catherine's world, it would be almost like enjoying babysitting, which she didn't. So Tibby watched. Catherine was inexhaustible. Why did she want the damn apples so much? Tibby couldn't imagine the nature of her desire. But Tibby could remember being small and wanting to jump, running and jumping just like Catherine, and imagining you were going to practically take flight, thinking you could jump so much higher than you really could. The first thing Bridget did when she got to soccer camp was find Diana. They'd spoken on the phone and exchanged many emails, but Bridget hadn't seen Diana in 2 years, not since the day they'd left Baja. And of all the things and people she'd encountered there, Diana stood out as her single happy memory. When she found her in their cabin, she screamed and hugged Diana so hard she lifted her off the ground.
God! Diana examined Bee's face. She stepped back. You look great. You grew?
You shrunk? Bee asked back.
Ha!
Bridget tossed her gigantic duffel bag onto her bunk. She wasn't big on folding or sorting. She used to pack in hefty bags, but Carmen made her stop. She hugged Diana again and admired her. Diana had kept her hair straightened 2 summers ago, but now she'd let it collect into long, pretty dreads. It looked unbelievably glamorous to Bee.
Look how you are. You are stunning and fabulous. Do you love Cornell?
Diana hugged back.
Yeah, except I live and breathe soccer. You'll see how it is.
You had time to find Michael, though, right? Did you bring a picture?
Bridget exclaimed and swore appreciatively at the picture of Diana's good-looking soccer-playing boyfriend, and also at the pictures of her hilariously hammy younger sisters.
So who else is here? Bridget asked, gesturing at the second set of bunk beds in the cramped cabin.
Two assistant coaches? Diana got a vague look on her face.
You met them? Bridget asked.
At lunch. Katie and something, she said. She closed one eye, trying to remember.
Allison, I think. Katie and Allison.
Bridget sensed an issue.
And they are?
Fine. Great.
Fine and great. Katie and Allison are fine and great. Diana smiled, vaguely. So, what's the problem?
What problem?
Why do you look like that?
Like what?
Diana asked, glancing downward. Bee felt impatient. Diana was an honest person. Why wasn't she being honest now? Diana pulled a hair elastic off her wrist and stretched it between her index finger and thumb.
You haven't met the other coaches yet, have you?
Diana's words came slow, and Bee's came very fast. No, have you?
Not all of them, but I saw...
Something about Diana's hair elastic was so fascinating her words trailed off in her deep contemplation of it.
Who?
Bee shot out.
You probably already...
Who?
I'm pretty sure you...
Bridget huffed in exasperation. She grabbed the arm that wore Diana's wristwatch and held it up so she could read it. We have a staff meeting in 8 minutes. I'm gonna find out who you're talking about.
I don't have to be careful. I've got a gun.
Homer Simpson.
Carmen was sitting at the table in the small kitchen of the apartment later that day, clutching the bottle of prenatal vitamins. In this time of thinking, certain facts aligned themselves in Carmen's mind. Her mother had gained weight in the past couple months. Carmen had put it down to happiness, but now she felt silly for not being more observant. Christina's wardrobe had subtly but certainly shifted toward the roomier stuff in her closet. Had she stopped drinking wine? Carmen tried to think. Had she gone for a lot of doctor's appointments? Carmen had once overheard her mom joking with her aunt about how it was easy to hide stuff from teenagers because they were so self-absorbed. She felt the sting of it now, though she'd laughed it off then. She heard a key in the lock of the front door. Her mother arriving home from work at the usual time. Carmen stayed sitting, knowing her mother would appear in the kitchen moments after she'd put her bags down. Carmen hadn't planned an ambush exactly, but it came off a lot like one.
Hi, Nana love.
Christina's whole body looked tired as she entered the kitchen.
She'd always eschewed the practice of wearing sneakers with her suit to and from work, but recently she'd caved on her dignity. Now Carmen understood why. Wordlessly, Carmen held up the bottle. Wordlessly, Christina stared at it, and slowly its significance registered. Her eyes widened, and her expression changed from confusion to surprise to dread to exhaustion and back again. Carmen decided to skip to the crux of the matter.
How far are you?
She asked in a moderated, matter-of-fact tone, though her heart was pounding. She knew it was true, but still she wanted her mother to deny it. Christina seemed to stiffen her spine to mount a vivid defense. She seemed to consider several possible angles. And then, before Carmen's eyes, she deflated again. Her dark red blouse appeared to crumple.
5 months.
You're kidding. Well, there it was.
When were you planning to tell me?
Carmen's voice was flatly accusatory.
Carmen, darling.
Christina sat down across from her. She wanted to reach for Carmen's hand, but Carmen was sitting on one and the other was strangling the neck of the vitamin bottle. Christina withdrew her attempt. She was quiet for a few moments, collecting her breath.
Just let me explain, okay? It's complicated.
Carmen offered something between a shrug and a nod.
David and I have talked and thought a lot about having a baby. He hasn't had that joy in his life as I have. We didn't know if it would be possible, but we agreed life is too short not to try for something you want.
Carmen hated the life is too short rationalization. She thought it was one of the lamer excuses in the history of excuse making. Whenever you did something because life is too short not to, you could be sure life would be just long enough to punish you for it.
At the very least, we thought it would take me a year or two to conceive if I did at all,
Christina went on. We never dreamed it would happen so fast. I'm almost 41 years old. Carmen cocked her head skeptically. With half her mind, she was calculating whether they'd conceived this baby before or after their wedding. It was a close call.
I didn't even guess I was pregnant until I was almost 3 months along. I just couldn't believe it. And then I needed to think about how to tell you. The timing was not what I had wished. It's very complicated.
Complicated. What a totally unsatisfying word. It was a politician's word.
There were your exams, your senior paper, then graduation crept up on us,
Christina continued, holding up her hands plaintively.
I didn't want any of your special things to get overshadowed by this news.
Were you going to tell me before it was born?
Reasonably, Christina looked hurt.
I was going to tell you this weekend.
Do you know what kind it is?
You mean a boy or a girl?
Carmen nodded.
No, we want to wait to find out when the baby is born.
Carmen nodded again, knowing as she did that this baby would be a girl. It just had to be.
So I guess it's due around...
Carmen had already calculated the baby would have to be born.